Penguin Random House Canada presents Laugh More, Stories from an Unexpected Life by Debbie Travis. Read for you by the author. This book is dedicated to everyone who's in desperate need of a good laugh. And always to Hans, my best friend, therapist, agent, list follower, daily drama fixer, washer-upper, bedmaker, and the person who always makes me laugh. And to my loves, Josh, Max, Fiona, Andy, and Billy the Border Collie. Introduction. There is something about laughter that can take away all the darkness. Christina Applegate. It's hard to nail down exactly when I told my first story, but I do remember the first time I captured an audience. I think it was about 8, the day I arrived home from school in my usually dishevelled fluster and barged into the living room, where my mother was entertaining her girlfriends over afternoon tea. Breathless, I told the women how George, the naughtiest boy in the class, had climbed onto the top shelf in the library while our teacher, round Mrs. Ramsbottom, who looked like a bee in her yellow trousers and black blouse, was reading to us. The teacher tried her best to ignore George, but then he slipped and landed on top of Helen, the hamster's cage. Both he and Helen escaped injury, but the cage was damaged and the hamster ran off. I paused there and took in the room, making sure I had their full attention. And then the finale. Hysteria reigned in the classroom. Chairs fell over as all the girls climbed up on their desks, skirts tucked into their knickers. The boys, including George, were down on their hands and knees, searching for Helen the hamster. Suddenly, a tremendous roar boomed from the doorway, causing us all to jump. The headmaster, Mr. Turnbull, who even the teachers were terrified of, stood there red-faced while Mrs. Ramsbottom, sobbing into her handkerchief, explained the situation to him. "Nobody move," he bellowed. "Except for you, Debbie. Go and fetch the janitor." I don't remember if Helen was caught, but I do remember tingling with pleasure as my mother's friends shrieked and gasped. My mother laughed too. I love to make her laugh. Since then, I've thrived on being a storyteller, a minstrel entertaining a crowd. What's not to love about telling a delightful tale? For me, sharing spicy snippets the morning after a party is as delicious as diving into last night's leftovers. It doesn't matter whether I'm speaking to an audience of one or a conference of 1,000 women. I always feel the itch to share a funny experience. Before a day's filming on my own series or as a guest on other people's shows, I'm filled with anxiety and self-doubt. But once I'm in the moment, the tales tumble forth. In life, my favourite thing may just be making others laugh, and I find it comes in handy too. Through 5 television shows and 11 books, I taught the art and craft of design, and later lifestyle and wellness. To my mind, there is nothing more boring than advice or instruction delivered straight. But if you build a story as you go, around the nervous family whose home you're smashing apart, the nosy neighbour who keeps popping in to give advice, the neurotic relatives worried that they're being one-upped, the viewer will not only be entertained, but engaged, taking in everything you hope to show them. But it won't work unless it's a good story, and it'll work even better if it's funny. I learned the art of embellishing a yarn with humour while sprawled at my mother's feet. My mum was young, beautiful, and exhausted, but she came alive when she told an entertaining tale. Her eyes shone with mischief, and the stern lines of the mouth that kept us kids in line would soften as she spoke. Her storytelling, an escape from the mundane chores of family life, and the hand that dealt her widowhood in her mid-30s. It wasn't hard to notice that she usually slanted her tales away from the truth for the sole purpose of making us laugh. Our joy was her prescription to carry on. As a storyteller, she was good, but she had nothing on her mother, my granny. lose the image of a blue-rinsed old lady, her knitting on her lap, sipping a lovely cuppa. Oh, no, my granny, who was not old, at most in her early 50s when I was a teenager, she'd given birth to my mum at 15, oozed glamour and naughtiness. Joyce, which is what we kids called her, was a northerner, just like us. But she lived half the year on the French Riviera, claiming she needed the warm, dry climate for medicinal reasons. We never quite knew what these were. But the medicine must have worked, because she died a week shy of her 90th birthday. And she might have carried on to 100, maybe accumulating another of her many husbands, if she'd still been living in France, rather than on the seafront in Morecambe, Lancashire, which is notorious for its blustery winds. Nipping to the shops one morning, she was whisked off her feet by a wild gust that deposited her on the hood of a police car. She died a few days later. For 20 years or more, Joyce had fled south to the Côte d'Azur, waving goodbye to the cold English drizzle. She never flew, not because she was afraid of crashing, but because she'd heard that airplane food was dreadful. Instead, she drove. Behind the wheel of a beat-up Volkswagen Beetle, she perched her tiny frame on a pile of cushions so she could see through the windscreen. She was an atrocious driver who should have been banned from the roads, keeping one arm free to gesture rudely to any motorist unlucky enough to be in her vicinity, and clutching the steering wheel with the other. Our own Cruella de Vil somehow survived the 2,000-kilometre drive from Morecambe to Monte Carlo, an inhabitant of two worlds that could not have been more different. Joyce was not the only expat lapping up life on the fashionable beaches in the elegant towns perched along the French Riviera. Nice, Monte Carlo, Cannes and Saint-Tropez, all playgrounds of the rich and the glamorous, were in their heyday in the 1960s and 70s. The Brits, fortunate enough to be able to indulge in a trip abroad, fled their homeland's nastier seasons, desperate to soak up the Mediterranean sun, sea, and endless cocktail parties. Following in the footsteps of the aristocrats of earlier centuries who'd been the first to seek a gentler climate for their health, the 7-kilometre palm-lined Promenade des Anglais in Nice is named after them. While my grandmother may have insisted that she went south for her health, she actually went for the parties, especially long afternoons sipping gin and tonic on terraces surrounded by lush vegetation and the gossip, which was her forte. Joyce loved to emboss slices of other people's lives with a mix of both sympathy and glittering wit. No matter how many times she told the same story, which was countless, she always added a new twist. Though she was not a drinker, in the social world of the Côte d'Azur, not to partake was frowned upon, so she faked it. She could nurse a solitary gin for hours, giving the impression she was as tipsy as the rest of the party, a ruse that enabled her to witness and remember the absurdities of the flamboyant, the fascinating, and the dreadful bores. Then she would bring her scandalous tales home to our comfy English living room and shock the knickers off us, though she did try to keep her accounts of the more colourful incidents relatively clean in front of us kids. A Joyce classic was the one about the old movie star who cornered her at a wealthy chic soiree in Cap Ferrat. Perched at the bar, she listened as he tediously rattled on about his performance in a particular Hollywood movie that later garnered him a global award. We didn't care about that. It was what he was doing while he mused to Joyce that had us in stitches every time. As the old egomaniac droned on and on about his achievements, he guzzled his way through a couple of oversized glasses of cognac, all the while munching from a large dish of what must have looked to him like dried seeds and nuts. Finally, he used a sausage-like finger to wipe the bowl clean of any last bits. After unleashing a loud and perfume belch, he declared to my grandmother that the snack was tasteless and dreadfully dry. Joyce smiled sweetly. She'd watched him polish off an entire bowl of potpourri. Even now that story makes me howl with laughter and miss her dreadfully. Every storyteller needs a good foundation for her tales, For the last 10 years, mine has been the upheaval that led me to changing everything I've been doing with my life and fulfilling my dream of moving to Italy. Mind you, when I first...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?